This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey there, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, best bits from the Business Breakfast on Tuesday, April the 30th, last day of April, as we gear up for a brand new month. But plenty for us to discuss on the show throughout the course of the morning. Earnings being top of the pile for us. Why? A whole host of earnings coming through. Q1 earnings, that is, from a number of UAE entities. Guess what? All good is one of the, well, simplest of surmisations on that one, but that certainly gave us the opportunity to talk about what that told us about the economy in the market at the moment. Talking about the economy in the market, obviously property plays a large part of that conversation. The commercial agency director at Chesterton's here in the region is Andrew Elliott. We got him in to talk about the news coming through in the last couple of days, DXB to not so much relocate, but be replaced by DWC. So the investment, significant investment into DWC, will say that see that take over as the principal airport here in Dubai. What's that mean for real estate in both the Dubai South area around the new airport and the Garhoud area around the old airport site? Professor Dame Heather McGregor is one of our favourite guests, Provost and Vice Principal at Heriot Watt University Dubai Campus. Heather was in to talk about a new bit of research that she co-authored, in fact, along with others, to look into the representation of women on boards here in the region and how that compares, well, here in the country, how that compares to the region and how that compares to international numbers the world over. It makes for an interesting read, the report itself, and an interesting chat here on the show. And we also looked about hotel expansion, the Ratana Hotel management team celebrating 30 years in the business last year. The Ratana brand has been an ever-present of hospitality here in the region. Their COO is Eddie Tanous. He's actually currently down in Saudi Arabia, in Riyadh, talking about the potential of hospitality and the future of hospitality in the region. Well, certainly part of their future is expansion, across the region, but equally across new markets as well. Some ambitious targets that they've set themselves. And that's all coming up right here on the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast. We have been having that discussion about the sort of the potential shift of focus for not just aviation, but businesses tertiary to aviation as well. Today, we've been looking at it from a real estate point of view.
Very much so, yes. Andrew Elliott joined us in the studio to give us this perspective. He's a real estate guy, director of commercial agency at Chesterton's MENA. So we looked at it from a couple of different perspectives. Well, three, actually. First, what does it mean for the Dubai South area around the new airport?
I think the biggest part is obviously the amount of staff that work at an airport. A lot of them are going to need accommodation. So I sort of feel there's going to be a move to build lower cost housing to facilitate all of the staff. I think if you look at the industrial areas in the immediate vicinity, Dubai Investment Park, Dubai Industrial City, and obviously they have their own airport free zone. I think there's going to be a huge demand for warehousing space. But I think it's also going to put pressure on prices within the area, places like Discovery Gardens, Al Fajan, Dubai Investment Park, which has got a lot of residential. As the airport starts sort of gathering momentum, you're going to have your people like cabin crew, you're going to have people that work in the airport, whether they're duty-free staff. They're all going to be looking to migrate from the current airport out to the new airport because nobody wants that sort of hour commute from the airports at the end of a shift.
Andrew, from Chesterton's there, we also asked him, we basically started south and then went further north. What does it mean for Dubai South? Pretty good, booming. What does it mean for Garhoud, then the old airport site, massive redevelopment, and then even further north, what does it mean for Sharjah International Airport and the area around then? And he seemed to be of the opinion it's good for all three, which is win-win-win. Well, you know, let's see if it works out that way, but we certainly hope it does. The most important question of all was asked by Andy earlier, wasn't it, Tom? And that is, what does it mean for Biggles Bar at the airport hotel? But that speaks to your wider point about all those hotels around there. Yeah, there are going to have to be some long, hard conversations. Millennium Airport Hotel without an airport. I mean, It's a conversation, isn't it?
Bigglesbar might be a little bit out of place, but, you know, still got the spirit there. A lot of people asking about investment opportunities as well. That's one we put to Andy as well. Is this now the time to start buying?
I think anything in that region. I mean, I was talking to a colleague yesterday afternoon, and we've got a lot of land for sale in that area. And I think anybody who's sitting on land or has a land bank is going to be looking to develop that. Dubai South, obviously, Emaar's come out with their huge project, Emaar South. You've then also got the Expo City that's developing quite a lot of real estate at the moment. But I do think there's going to be a bigger push from developers, maybe instead of building the high-end sort of vanity projects, to lower sector staff accommodation.
Yeah, we'll hear from Andrew in more detail a little later on. Lots going on in the world of earnings as well. Deanie, some blockbuster earnings coming through from the UAE.
Oh, just incredible. Yeah, Aldar kicked it off yesterday morning with nearly doubling profit. Share price up for Aldar, 4% on the back of that. Then in the evening, you had some big Dubai companies cracking numbers from Do, 60-odd% increase in profit. Dubai Financial Market, profit tripled at Dubai Financial Market. There were some one-time investment gains in there, but even the underlying trading revenue was much higher at Dubai Financial Market. This earnings season is turning out to be a classic. It really is. Local companies doing really well.
Good news for Hamad Ali, CEO of Dubai Financial Market and Nasdaq Dubai. In fact, he was in studio with us only last week, and we took the opportunity to ask him about Dubai's booming IPO scene. Is that weighing in on the earnings?
If we look at the past IPOs we did, the IPOs raised about, the eight IPOs raised about 35 billion dirhams. The amount of demand that these IPOs generated was approximately $1.1 trillion. So where we have a connectivity in the market. We have primary liquidity on the market that can accelerate the growth of private sector businesses. We've done so far two private sector businesses, Ta'lim and Ansari, which was the first family business IPO. To bring in a business such as Spinneys, it does a number of things for the market. One, it proves to the family businesses that the market can support their growth and the market is designed for family businesses. The second part is that we're designed for private sector. If you look at Dubai, Dubai is an environment that's designed to serve the growth of the private sector in terms of a scale-up as well as growth aspect.
That was Hamad Ali, CEO of Dubai Financial Market.
This is the Bite-sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
So plans over the weekend announced for the new airport. It's going to be massive, 128 billion dirhams. We looked at the airport itself yesterday with, among others, Paul Griffiths of Dubai Airports. But what does it mean for the real estate around it? Here in the studio is the Director of Commercial Agency at Chesterton's for the Middle East and North Africa, Andrew Elliott. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Richard.
I've got loads of questions for you. I know you've been looking at this, but I'm going to give the first one to Andy, who's written. And then who hits the nail on the head? What is going to happen to Bigglesbar at the Airport Millennium Hotel? This is what Dubai wants to know, Andrew.
I think it's still going to remain. I think it's got such a big following that there's no way it's going to go anywhere. Maybe it doesn't quite have the clientele that it had before, but it's an iconic bar of Dubai. And I can't see it going anywhere.
It is Mark Lloyd's spiritual home, our colleague, and the late, great Jason Lumber as well. Okay, let's be serious for a second. 128 billion dirham airport up at Dubai South. It's going to be 260 million people, the biggest in the world by far. You've been looking at what it means for real estate in that part of town, first of all.
I think the biggest part is obviously the amount of staff that work at an airport. A lot of them are going to need accommodation. So I sort of feel there's going to be a move to build lower cost housing to facilitate all of the staff. I think if you look at the industrial areas in the immediate vicinity, Dubai Investment Park, Dubai Industrial City, and obviously they have their own airport free zone. I think there's going to be a huge demand for warehousing space. But I think it's also going to put pressure on prices within the area, places like Discovery Gardens, Al Fajan, Dubai Investment Park, which has got a lot of residential. As the airport starts sort of gathering momentum, you're going to have your people like cabin crew, you're going to have people that work in the airport, whether they're duty-free staff. They're all going to be looking to migrate from the current airport out to the new airport because nobody wants that sort of hour commute from the airports at the end of a shift.
So it is now the time to start buying real estate there. I'm looking at Bayut.com, one of the popular portals. You can buy a one-bedroom apartment there. There's plenty of them for 400,000, 450,000 dirhams. Are you long real estate in that region at the moment?
I think anything in that region. I mean, I was talking to a colleague yesterday afternoon, and we've got a lot of land for sale in that area. And I think anybody who's sitting on land or has a land bank is going to be looking to develop that. Dubai South, obviously, Emaar's come out with their huge project, Emaar South. You've then also got the Expo City that's developing quite a lot of real estate at the moment. But I do think there's going to be a bigger push from developers, maybe instead of building the high-end sort of vanity projects, to lower sector staff accommodation.
And in terms of commercial real estate, we know up there, drive around, and there's all kinds of, there's factories, there's loads of warehousing, isn't there? You drive around there, you'd see big Noon warehouse, Landmark, the retailer's got a big warehouse there. Nestle's got a big factory up there as well, and Pepsi as well. So you see these big facilities. Are we going to get more offices up there, do you think? Or is it not really the kind of place for offices?
I mean, at the moment, Dubai South has a huge business park anyway. So definitely, I think there will be a demand for more offices. And I think you'll start to see more communities being built out there that are mixed use with residential and commercial. Dubai South Free Zone has been there for quite a while. They benefit from, obviously, cargo flying in. There's also a bonded road across into Jaffa. So you could fly products in and ship them straight out. But definitely within that 311 corridor, there's going to be demand for warehousing, office space, residential space, and then obviously retail space.
But could you have the likes of, I don't know, yourself, Chestertons and the real estate companies, or the banks, Standard Chartered, HSBC, or the, you know, the PwCs and Ernst & Youngs of this world? Are they really going to open offices there? Would their staff want to work out there?
I think the airport is going to have its own sort of microclimate of who's going to be based there. Downtown Dubai is still going to be downtown. People aren't going to be moving from DIFC suddenly to the new airport. And I think Dubai's got to the stage where it's that big a city that the airport can cope on its own without needing the people from DIFC moving down there, or sort of global companies moving there to support it. I think the airport, with 280 million passengers, it will support itself, and the spillover will come into the city.
Has your phone been ringing yet, or the email inbox been pinging? It has been less than 24 hours since Sheikh Mohammed tweeted, or 48 hours since Sheikh Mohammed tweeted these plans. So it's early days yet.
I haven't had anybody calling me specifically looking for land or looking for facilities in Dubai South just yet. But I do think, as announcements of when they're going to start construction, when they're going to complete construction, I think that's when people are going to start looking at buying down there. I think the early bird would get in there now, secure either space to build or secure apartments if it's a long-term investment.
Okay, that's Dubai South. You think it's set for a good period, and there's a sound logic behind that. But what about what happens to the plot in Garhoud? Paul was on the show yesterday, Paul Griffiths of Dubai Airport, saying we are going to have a one airport strategy. DXB will shut down, so it will be something else. We were joking about Biggles at the Millennium Airport Hotel in Deira, but it does speak to a wider point about repurposing a massive area of Dubai.
And I think that whole area, I mean, you've had new generation or regenerative products as you go through Shindaga Tunnel, which is now called the, trying to think of the name of it. But I think that whole area needs a regeneration. And I think putting in a huge, great big mixed-use development, putting in some shopping malls, putting in residential, putting in some commercial space will definitely benefit that area. And I think that will also then help areas like Umm Ramul be redeveloped, and then into, obviously, the Gold Souk, Deira, places like that being redeveloped.
What does it mean for Sharjah? We had a lot of people writing in yesterday saying this could be really good news for Sharjah Airport as an airport, but also the ecosystem around Sharjah Airport if you take the Garhoud Airport in Dubai out of the equation.
I think they've both got their own clientele. I don't think they really feed across to each other that much. I think the Fly Dubai Emirates tie-up is where the biggest tie-up. I'm not sure how many people fly in on Air Arabia and then move over to Sharjah Airport, Dubai Airport. But I also think if you look at the people that live in Sharjah, they've obviously got a choice. They probably will now look to fly more with Air Arabia than commuting to the new airport.
What does it mean for luxury villas? Someone writes in, can I get the name of this message? In the Dubai South area, now it will be under the flight path. It's Chris who's written in with that one. Exclusive villas in Dubai South may not be too happy being under the flight path.
I think Garhoud has always been a very prominent area for high-end villas, and I don't see that changing as long as you're not directly underneath the flight path. I think there's going to be people, like I say, working at the airport who will be using villas and who will want to live in that location. So I don't think it's going to have too much of an effect on that, unless they're directly underneath the flight path. But I mean, you look at the new Palmon or the waterfront in Deira, they're building high-end villas and a golf course directly under the flight path there. Sales there have been amazing.
Last question in terms of broadly the Dubai real estate market. 1st of May tomorrow, 2023 was a boom period. First quarter of 2024 has been a boom period. We've seen that in Aldar's numbers yesterday. Does it continue?
I don't see anything changing over the short term. I think if you look at what's going on in the economy's strong. We're still attracting a huge amount of people moving to Dubai. And I don't see anything in the short term that potentially could change this market.
Andrew Elliott of Chesterton's, great speech. Appreciate your time this morning talking about the real estate implications of the new airport in Dubai South. Thank you.
Thank you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk about women in leadership now, or rather the lack thereof. Dame Heather McGregor, Professor Dame Heather McGregor, is Provost and Vice Principal at Heriot Watt University Dubai Campus and with us in the studio. Morning, Heather.
Hello and good morning.
You're with us because a new piece of research is out from you guys, Heriot Watt and Aurora 50 here in the UAE, which shows that women now hold 11% of board seats at listed companies here in the UAE. Now, that's not great, particularly compared to the United States, where it's about 33%. But it's better than the GCC, where it's just 5%. What have you found out?
So I'm very pleased with the progress in the UAE. I think comparing it to the United States is not necessarily the best comparison. If you go back to 2020, here in the UAE, women held 3.5% of all board seats. So, you know, start from that base and you can see that it's almost a trebling of this. I think the other thing is to remember the expanding size of the number of companies here. I mean, you were talking, you know, a few minutes ago on air about different companies IPOing here and financial results. There's actually been quite a big expansion of companies here. By June 2022, we got to 8.9%. And the reason there was such a big increase between 2020 and 22 was we had a decree in March 21 by the Securities and Commodities Authority to say that they would like to see a woman on every board by 2025. Now, we haven't got to 2025 and we certainly haven't got to a woman on every board. But the fact that we got that decree in 21 shows you how we got this big improvement from 3.5 to where we are now, which is overall 11.3. So I think that legislation and having the will of the country behind it and legislation only goes to show what effect this can be. And there hasn't been that kind of legislation in any other GCC country. So that's why you've seen this improvement here in the UAE.
Okay, you're an academic. So what grade are we giving the UAE and the rest of the GCC? I saw this and I thought, okay, you work for a university. I was going to give the UAE a C- for this, just scraping a pass at 11%, but I'm giving the rest of the GCC a fail. But that's my back of an envelope. What about you?
You know, you don't know what the pass mark is. What's the pass mark? I only give people C's and fails when I know what the pass mark is and I can see the work amount. I still stick by my view that this is actually quite a lot of progress. Can we just go back again to, as I said, to the events of 21 here were quite important. So the first thing that happens is in March of 21, this decree comes out. So this is the middle of the post-pandemic, you know, utter chaos everywhere. But they managed to make a decision that this was important and that they wanted to make this decree to put a woman on every board. And then, actually, in October of that year, they appointed a new CEO of the SEC, which was a woman, Dr. Mariam Al-Suwaidi. And she's been instrumental in leading forward the whole market's development here in the UAE. And those, to me, are some very big signals. I would actually give them an A. You know, those kind of activities are A-grade activities. And we can see the improvement. And this is why we're streets ahead of the rest of the GCC. Now, it doesn't mean that it can't get better. And I would like to see a woman on every board by 2025. But it's this week, it'll be May 2024, and we haven't got long to go. So I think, you know, an A, but not an A+.
Good. Okay, fine. So we're doing well in terms of boards of directors. But what about the C-suite? This got me thinking about who've we got in the C-suite of UAE-listed companies. And of course, Hanawal Rostamani at FAB, the biggest bank in the country, stands out. Senior Emirati business leaders. But there aren't many others. Multiply in Abu Dhabi has a female CEO. I was racking my brains to think of others.
Well, you know, ADNOC, the head of downstream, is a woman, Fatima. I've also got some real examples in my own life. My pro-chancellor, Dr. Raja Al-Gurg, is the executive chairman of the Al-Gurg group. I don't feel deprived of female leadership in businesses.
I've been trotting out Raja Al-Gurg as an example of a strong female Emirati leader for decades now.
Well,
and
good.
She's amazing, yes. But... If we're still having to quote her as an example, there aren't
enough,
I would argue.
I'm shaking around here because she's only barely a bit older than me. So I tell you that she is a daily inspiration to me. And as I said, she's my pro-chancellor, so I suppose I would say that. But, I feel blessed to have someone like that in my life. And also the Al-Gurg Group has got so many different arms that you could call her the CEO of a dozen different kind of companies. But I don't feel the lack of female leadership, with people like Mariam El-Swaidi leading our markets here and Raja. I just don't feel the lack of female leadership. But what I would like to see is more opportunities for women to serve on public company boards across the GCC. And the whole point, by the way, of producing work like this is so that it can be used in academic research and so that it can come out every year, which is what we do in the UK. And I believe that if you want to value the things that you measure, you need to measure the things that you value. So if you don't measure the things you value, you will end up only valuing the things you measure. And I would like us to measure this every year so that we start valuing it and looking for progress.
It's a great piece of research. Thank you very much indeed for doing it. So kudos to you guys at Harriet Watt and also at Aurora 50. The research is out. If you want to find detail, what's the title of the research so people can Google it?
It's the GCC Board Gender Index.
There you go. Professor Dame Heather McGregor, Provost and Vice Principal, Harriet Watt University, Dubai campus. I was listening to myself. I'm not having a go at the research. I think it's brilliant. It's just healthy journalistic scepticism. But like you, I'm delighted that we're making progress. Heather, appreciate your time.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, time now for us to talk all things hospitality. Time for us to look at the landscape of hospitality, not just across the UAE, not just across the GCC, but further afield as well. Who better to talk to than one of the biggest and most respected brands out there at present, Abu Dhabi hotel operator Ratana is a name and a brand that has had a celebrated position in the market over the course of the last 30 years. Celebrated 30 years in operation last year and now looking further afield. Time for us to catch up with their COO, Eddie Tanous. Eddie from Ratana Hotel Management, who is live in Riyadh at the moment for the Future Hospitality Summit, rather fittingly. Eddie, always good to catch up with you. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's great to be on the show.
Let's get on to all things Ratana in a few moments' time. But first and foremost, let's address where you are. Very exciting times over in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia for hospitality and other industries at the moment. Some good talks being had at the Future Hospitality Summit?
Yeah, as you mentioned, Tom, consequently, the last time I spoke on the show, I was in the Future Hospitality Summit in Abu Dhabi. And today I'm in Riyadh attending Future Hospitality Summit. Yesterday was the opening ceremony. Today is the first day of business talk. There's a lot of movement in Saudi Arabia. The market is pushing forward aggressively. Everyone is in here. There's a lot of exciting talks, both on government global projects, but also on individual investors wanting to push the envelope forward as well. It's a very exciting time, I think, for the whole region of the Middle East, but Saudi plays a huge part in this.
And it's a very exciting time for the Ratana brand as well. I mentioned the 30-year celebrations last year, but ambitious plans for openings moving forward as well. 2024, I understand there's not six new markets that you'll be exploring.
So 2023, we celebrated 30 years. And the objective since then was we want to open at least 10 hotels every year. We have opened 3 hotels so far in Q1. We opened our Bomonti Arjan in Istanbul. We opened two properties in Saudi Arabia. One in Saudi Arabia and one in Doha. So we are on track to completing the target. We have exactly 8 properties scheduled to open for the rest of the year. And to your point, Tom, they are scattered. The ambition is to get out, as we said last time, from our original inception point, which is Abu Dhabi, and then Dubai, and then the region. Today, we have very exciting projects. We're opening North Coast in Egypt. We're opening Algeria. We're opening in a couple of years, we're going to be opening Georgia. One of the most exciting projects for us is London. We have the Centro brand going into London with a very good concept. We spoke about it a little bit last time. But we're very excited for the first two openings. The first one will be this year in Kingston. And then New Malden will follow straight after. The concept would be to be in all the cities like Liverpool, like Manchester, and to be present around 20 minutes, 30 minutes from London by train ride, catering to that business traveler that doesn't want to pay £1,000 a night, but still wants a perfect experience, still wants no issues on their stay because they're going there to conduct business. That part, that project, we're very excited about, and it gives us a dimension that we haven't ventured into in the last 30 years, and it takes us to that next level in our company.
You mentioned the expansions into the UK. You've also mentioned Georgia there, so Europe, one of those targeted areas. Your chief executive has also been talking about the opportunity in Pakistan, Africa moving forward as well. How important is the franchise model for you moving to new footprints and new markets?
We love and hate the franchise model. Hate probably not the right word, but the franchise model is an essential part of an expansion of any hotel company. Because it's a faster way of doing business. But on the flip side, we are very keen to make sure that we partner with the right partners on franchise, because we want to make sure that we continue delivering the exact same promise that we have in all our hotels, regardless of whether the hotel is a franchise or a managed hotel. If you see the brand, Rotana brand, on any hotel, you should be expecting to receive the Rotana service. So we are very excited about franchise. We are very analytical about how we choose to partner with. Yesterday, we had some exciting conversations in the Future Hospitality Summit with partners that are in the market that are interested to work with us on this. Yes, we will be visiting Pakistan in a couple of weeks to probably seal the deal on a very exciting franchise opportunity there for the Rotana brand. And we continue looking at those right opportunities for us to grow in the franchise segment.
The numbers look great. 30 new properties being targeted to be added to the portfolio by 2026. As you've mentioned already, 6 new markets. That includes the UK. Expansion of properties over in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The international expansion and ambition is obvious, but equally, just how key is the Middle East, your home region, if you like, at the moment? Because we have seen significant tourism growth here.
Middle East is arguably where it's all happening right now for the hospitality sector. If you look at the figures from the US, from Europe, those markets are very well-established markets. They're mature markets. And here in the Middle East, we have the biggest opportunity, that's for sure. And any company that wants to grow sustainably, and I think we're very proud to have seen Rotana grow in the way it did grow in the last 30 years, any company that wants to grow sustainably has to start growing around its core, around its, its strength point. Middle East will always be important for us. You know, part of the 10 properties that we're opening this year, we have 2 properties, one in Abu Dhabi and one in Ras Al Khaimah with Bloom Investments. We have another property opening between Abu Dhabi and Saudi on the border to cater for the travelers going in by land as well. So we will always continue focusing on our areas of strength. We are constantly looking for the right opportunities in Dubai, for landmark properties as well in Dubai. Ras Al Khaimah, as I said, is very important for us. Saudi, I mean, today we have 8 properties under construction in Saudi. We're opening our first property in Medina, which is very important for us because we are already present in Mecca with a great property. And our property in Medina is going to be stunning. It's going to be walking distance from Haram. So we will continue to focus on the Middle East, no doubt. I think what's more important for us, Tom, is how we grow, which brands do we lead in with each market. I'll give you an example. In London, we're focused a lot on the Centro brand. In Riyadh, everyone is in Riyadh. All the big brands are in Riyadh, including us. We're focusing on the Edge brand in Riyadh because we think Edge is going to find that sweet spot, is going to find that niche where, you know, a lot of consultants coming into Dubai, yeah. And it was mentioned on your show this morning as well, to Riyadh, I'm sorry. And again, you need to come and have a good stay, a clean stay, a hotel that's a little bit fun, but without paying too much on, you know, without hurting your pocket too much, sure. Or without incurring too many expenses. So we want to position this brand, not cheap, obviously, but at the right price point, but delivering, you know, seamless, sure. Excellent business service. So our growth is, we're really trying to be strategic in how we grow. It's not everything for everyone. We want to have a sniper rifle approach, and we're trying to lead each brand in the niche.
Eddie, got to leave it there. Unfortunately, time is against us on this occasion. Won't keep you any longer. Eddie Tanu, COO of Rotana Hotel Management, kind enough to join us live from the Future Hospitality Summit down in Riyadh.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.